Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Dear listener, how are you doing? I'm trying very hard to focus on the light right now. I stopped watching the mainstream news in 2020, and although I keep myself informed of what's going on in the world, I balance that with ensuring I'm maintaining well-being. I hope you're finding ways to stay well too. Despite the impotence of most of our governments, people are coming together all over the world to lead the way, which I find very heartening. I want to say to young people in particular, keep the faith. I do believe we are pushing through to better times despite the worst horror and destruction we're currently witnessing. Humanity is woven together with love so much more powerful than fear or hate. We will get through this together and build a new world, which is already happening. And I firmly believe it's our amazing young people who will lead this. I'm going to link to some well-being resources that I use on the show notes here, which are all free. This episode leads on somewhat from our last episode along the Thames. Again, we are in England, this time in Lancashire, northern England, and we hear from musician Sam McLaughlin, who as a young man aged 17 or 18 experienced an enchantment in a local woodland. He had known this place all his life and was visiting with a friend when he heard what sounded like children's voices coming from the river. That day, in the woodland, they both experienced orbs and a sense of strange shift in reality, commonly known as the Oz factor, a term coined by Jenny Randalls. You may have previously heard Sam's music in the background of some of my episodes, particularly the Jack Frost episode. Sam's album Environmental Meditation was created by recording a water harp in a river. The instrument was made by Sam, and the resulting music is incredibly otherworldly. I find it so interesting, but of course no surprise, that Sam went on to create music with water after this encounter. In this episode, I'm going to be sharing more of his music from an album called Fey Transit, and both of these albums will be linked on the show notes and are available on Bandcamp. I hope you enjoy this episode and do come and join our community on Patreon if that sounds like the sort of community you'd like to become part of. We hold monthly Zooms and there are lots of my own meditations and path workings there too. Thank you to all members of the Curious Crew who support this show, and you provide such a welcoming and informative space in the private Discord group. So much gratitude to you. Thank you. And big thanks again to our guest Sam for sharing his story. What you're about to hear is a shortened version, and on the full-length version on Patreon, he talks about the many out-of-body experiences and sleep paralysis he endured as a young person. He talks about how he has navigated these throughout his life. It's a very moving story and one which resonated with many of us in the group when we heard the early release. We know that there is much more to this world, and this is the point of this project. Many of us know it, but not all of us feel able to talk about it for various reasons. I want to let people know that they are not alone with these experiences. You know the truth and beauty that lies deep within you. You know that you came here to love and to ascend to your own personal freedom, being who you truly are and doing what you came here to do. The possibilities are infinite. You can decide in a moment to let go of all that binds you, open to the possibility of transformation and step into that new way of being. Remain curious. Time to renovate.
mystical experiences in general is fraught with danger, or it has been, you know, socially. So coming out, as it were, you know, speaking about it in a more public forum, it's never been something that I've considered doing, you know. Keep it private, and there's other reasons to keep it private too. Keeping things magical, keeping them mysterious, you know, not wanting to, like, I've told that story enough times now that it kind of overlays the event, remembering the event. And it's like that for a lot of it, these experiences that I've had. So I was very careful not to, I forget, it's like I just want to tell it once, you know, and then kind of live my life. I don't know where the fae begins and other spiritual entities, how you differentiate. In my experience, it's always been a very dynamic and changing. The experience that I told you about was the one that would closest match the sort of archetypal about the good folk. It happened in a place that has history as well, of me and a dear friend who I've not seen in ages. It was dusk and we were walking in the hills near Rochdale, where I grew up, moorland. And we decided to walk down into the nature reserve in some very steep valleys, you know, with beautiful rocks that are carved by the water over centuries. We weren't using the paths, so we were kind of just jumping from fences and stuff. So we were coming into a path that's not very frequently visited. As we came down into the forest, we noticed like a mist in the air. And a feeling as well, a feeling that we couldn't ignore, you know, it was like something had changed in the atmosphere. So we walked into the mist and we both started behaving a bit strangely, like children. That was the thing that I remember. We had like a sense of playfulness that just suddenly came over us, and this weird mist, and it really looked like something out of a Hammer horror movie or something like that, or you know, like a fantasy film. Weirdly, we both kind of went our separate ways, kind of enjoying this strange atmosphere, just being in it. I started to hear voices. It sounded almost like children playing, but not exactly, you know. And so I started following this sound. And then as I came to like what felt like the source of the sound, it sounded like it was actually one with the river. It was like a small stream that down in the bottom of the brook. And I knelt down and I listened to the stream and listened to these voices coming out of the stream for I don't know how long. It might have just been a few seconds before I turned to my friend and shout, you know, I actually didn't shout him. I think I just sort of whispered him over, sort of thing. Come and listen to this. And he knelt down with me. And after we were listening just for a little while, and I think simultaneously we both looked up, and across the bank of the river was a group of lights, like orbs, probably about this big. And they were moving around and they were alive. This was the feeling that we had. They were alive and we knew that they could see us, you know. That was, and more than that, it felt like they'd come to this is the way we both interpreted it. They'd come to show themselves almost, you know, like they wanted to say hello. That's the way we felt. They were interacting sometimes and coming away, and they sort of moved within an area about this big, and they would come together and move apart, and that we felt like we were being watched or shown. That was the feeling. It was the build-up too, because of the listening to the voices come from the river. That phenomena I've noticed since a few times too. You know, I've been at rivers or heard it and heard the voices, and I've sensed them as well at other times. Not just in that forest, in other places where it's like I feel like it's about to start happening again. You know, but it doesn't go all the way. And then I don't know what happened. We stared at them. For I don't know how long. That's a bit of a sort of a weird time, that actually we were staring at these things. We were transfixed, that's like, you know, in awe. We were completely in awe, and silent. And but there was definitely a feeling of psychic communication or something like that, of oneness with these things. And it kind of went with that shift in the feeling of reality itself being like a dream. And then I got spooked because I remembered the folk tales about that area. And I remembered the people in these folk tales getting abducted. I said, we've got to get out, you know, we've got to leave here. Suddenly this sort of really magical, I got scared. Looking back, I didn't really feel like I should have done, but I did at the time. The strange thing is, to get away from this area, we actually had to cross the river, which meant kind of going towards where this phenomenon, where these lights were, which if I was scared of, I really wouldn't have done. You know, I was acting kind of strange, I think we both were. So we crossed the river and then we went up the bank and out into the light again. And we sat down at the top of the other hill on the other side of the valley in stunned silence. I think we're exchanging a few words here and there, you know, just, and then this sort of coda to this little story is this feather, a perfect little white feather floated down right across our eye line like this, like something out of a Disney movie. And before landing absolutely perfectly on my friend's knee, and the way it caught her attention and it happened so perfectly in the way it sat there, it was just as magical as this thing we'd just seen down at the bottom of the hill, you know. And it was, we felt like so lucky. That was the feeling, like so blessed. That gratitude was the overwhelming feeling that we both felt. There was a bit of skepticism, you know, for me. I did go over it and I was thinking, how would you fake that effect? Like I kind of imagined, I did get to the point where I was thinking, if you were very clever and you had the technology and you were mischievous, you might want to fool some, we weren't that young, we were about 18, you know, so you might want to fool some people into thinking that there's fairies down there, but you couldn't have done everything, no way. I mean, and we went and told our friends, and then the next day we all went back to the same spot and they brought cameras and things like that, you know, hoping to get some photos. But when we got there, the atmosphere was just completely, I don't use the word mundane, but it was normal. You know, it was just totally normal. And as soon as we got there, me and my friend who'd witnessed it said to these other people, said, there's no chance, they're not here. You know, they're not here, we can tell, you know. So that's the story.
Oh, I mean, there's so many factors to this, isn't there? The Jenny Randall's Oz factor of suddenly something shifting. You're not in what we refer to as normal reality.
This sounds a bit weird, but it felt like reality felt like a fake, like a stage set. Yeah. Like everything felt unreal in like a, and very much like being in a dream, you know, like, but there was something about it that was like, and when we saw and heard, because of the sonic factor, it really was like someone pulling back at the curtain, you know, you're getting to see behind the curtain of reality. And and also what it looked like as well, or felt like, was that reality is a bit of a bad stage set. You know, you can see through it. That's kind of how we felt that night as well. It was an easy trick almost that we were always falling for, but we were somehow lucky enough to see behind it or something that night.
That our kind of waking normal reality is the illusion, and that actually you get to see what's really real in these experiences. I think what's interesting also, well, first of all, you've gone off the beaten track, haven't you? You're exploring and you're being led by perhaps your own curiosity or other forces. We don't know what led you there. But once you've entered into this space, you talked about becoming sort of quite childlike and sort of going into this childlike state of wonder where you're really sensing, and we can remember doing that as kids, can't we? If we just went into the garden, or we're at the park, or wherever we were, there was sensory experiences that we just don't seem to, or we very rarely anyway, well, at least not sort of naturally tap into as adults, but as kids, yeah, it's innate, isn't it?
Something you said then really chimes with me is that, you know, like going off the beaten track, and we were kind of breaking rules, you know, like, so just going down this way and into the forest without the paths and everything, as stupid as that might sound, but we were. And another thing about the phenomena that I've noticed in other experiences is that it loves you to play along. So I feel like our attitude of who we were, you know, and that was our playground. We'd spent a lot of time growing up there, spent having fires, camping out, but we knew it like the back of our hands, you know. And my granddad walked in that part of the wood all the time. That was his favorite part of the wood, you know. So, and that was where we would get up to, you know, loads of naughtiness, not in that particular spot where they were, because that was in a sort of quite a strange little nook and cranny down by a little river, but just up a little bit on the ledge, we would spend, God, you know, so much of my time, like playing, making fires. There's something about that naughtiness that I think is like the resonant, maybe, you know. So we spent ages inhabiting it. And I suppose the way I feel now is that it was almost like we, us and this thing were the same in some way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we'd been playing along for maybe years before this thing had happened, you know.
That's very important, I feel, that you were familiar with this environment, because this is something that comes up again and again, where there's this kind of relationship. And what I tend to notice a lot is that there's this kind of communing between us as individuals and the landscape, particularly when, and it can really build when you get to know a landscape, you are just very, very familiar with it. Do you remember what time of year and the time of day that it?
It was dusk in the bottom of the valley. It was dark, but then as you're going up, as the trees got thin or the tree line, you were in it was quite daytime. So I think it must have been sort of early or late summer. Yeah, I didn't write a diary. I've only written a few notes in my life with dates next to them, so I can't remember.
Do you remember what colour the orbs were?
I think they were mostly white, but I'm tempted to say they had, like, you know, oranges and purples or something like that, like strands, you know, quite will-o'-the-wisp type things. I only found out about that phenomena a long time later, like just a few years ago, actually. And then I was just sort of like, oh yeah, that's definitely what it was. And then I looked into it a bit more, and I thought, no, these were more alive than the will-o'-the-wisp sounds and the singing and stuff of the sound. So these were more living orbs of plasma or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the right word to describe them, really. This kind of living plasma, this kind of energy or consciousness of some kind.
But I know, like, people like yourself have seen like lots of humanoid things, right? Like, that is not uncommon in this area too. And I've got friends who've seen little people, you know, of different sorts and things like that.
Oh,
so
I've
never experienced anything like that.
Can you describe anything about the voices?
Like I said, they were like kind of like children, but not exactly. And there was no discernible words or anything like that. Definitely a real cheekiness, and like they were playing. When I think about it now, it's obvious that they were kind of reeling me in. You know, that's how I felt. Like I was just following this. I was being fairy led. You know?
Yeah, being pixie led. Yeah.
And then the brilliant twist was when I got to the river, and they were coming from the river. I mean, I know what a river sounds like. We all do, you know. It's like, I know what a little babbling brook sounds like. But this was, it was mingled really beautifully with the river. So it was like the river was singing and talking and playing. Sure. See, so we get to like these maybe like elementals or whatever you want to call them, you know.
Do you remember if anything happened kind of around that time in your life afterwards?
No, I can't remember, but there was so much stuff happening, you know, just socially, and everything like that. Like, it was a time, a lot of change, because maybe it was just before we all kind of split to go to university and stuff. There was a whole load of different things happening, but because I was with somebody, I mean, it changes. This is why it's a story, you know, because I've got lots of other stories that are just happened to me alone, you know. But I felt like, yeah, perhaps this was going to go dark, you know. And I think maybe as well, there was a feeling of, even if it's not out to get you, us, it was maybe still dangerous, you know, that this could have, it could, like, getting too close to a fire or something like that, we could get burnt. Because I'd heard some versions of the fairy stories of that area. But it's basically someone gets taken to fairyland at one point, and there is, like, kind of bad, some evil fairies and maybe some good, I can't remember the story. So I only had little crumbs from my childhood, really. But because I knew there was some malefic kind of element to it, I think that was, I remembered that and thought, well, we have to get out of here. I think I was just being cautious person in general. I think if it was up to my friend, he probably would have stayed there. And he might have just gone all the way. I don't know. He might have just gone to fairyland or something. I don't know.
That's also sort of part of that, the Oz factor, in that you've entered into this reality, not reality, different sounds, you know, different senses going on. What often happens when people kind of come out of that with any kind of contact, it's quite blurry, it's quite fuzzy.
We weren't behaving usual. It was as if we would walked into a field of gas or something that was like making us behave, you know, like children or something, yeah, like that. You know, like, you could literally feel, say that there was something like, but as quickly as we went into it, it disappeared, you know. Mm. So it wasn't like a drug effect of any sort that I've experienced before, you know. It was and yeah, I've heard that before about in a lot of alien abduction encounters where people, they should be frightened out of the wits at what's happening, but they're not.
No.
And that's been my experience with other experiences too, you know. You just think there's something, it's like you know it or something.
Yes,
there's another part of you that knows what this thing is and how to interact with it. This thing that happened, it was because there were two of us that saw it, it was kind of closer to this world. It was as if the astral was really solid. My metaphysical metaphors or whatever, there, that's kind of how it felt. If it was to happen when you're completely alone, something like that, then the subjectivity, hallucination things can really, but when things are more solid, especially if there's a few people who see them, and there's a lot of encounters where people describe slightly different things, isn't there?
Yeah,
you'll know about that, you know.
Yeah.
There might be a group of people who see something and a group that don't. But what I think I was driving at is that this was very much manifest in this world, even though it did feel like the world had gone fake, you know, like I said, like a dream. That feeling of the world being a dream is often felt in times of traumatic experiences, like a car crash, for example, or something like that, where suddenly everything is like unreal and the brain's trying to catch up. And that, I think that feeling is very close to that Oz effect feeling.
Yeah.
It's like something going on there. It can be good experiences too, like, you know, it can be real magical things, but it's I think there needs to be something that really shifts and jolts you out of the thing, something like that. But an experience in the everyday is what I'm saying, that feeling that was there that night.
When you have different experiences, sometimes you can shift, and it can be through some kind of shock or even joy, or perhaps the landscape that you're walking into. Maybe there was something about the landscape there. But what happens is you start to experience the world through a different perceptual filter. So you have your kind of home filter that you're usually experiencing, you know, the world through. If you're jumping into these other realms of experience, especially if you're used to experiencing, say, through your third eye, or your connection to the all, if you have, say, opened your mind already and exercised that muscle through the natural medicines that you'd been experimenting with. You're kind of used to that. Your being is used to flitting into these different states. And so when you step into what you stepped into that day, it wasn't so much of a jump for you to open to that, perhaps, as perhaps somebody else might have been.
I would see that for sure. Yeah. Mm. I think it's like you were talking about the natural medicine thing again, the more you will sort of get to know it, sometimes the less you need to use to get to have certain things. And then sometimes it can be like, you really don't need the thing anymore. Get to a point where you can leave that behind. You've broken down the filters that were stopping you being able to exercise, to see the thing. I could go into detail about the years leading up to that event and that forest. I had loads of out-of-body experiences from being very, very young.
This section is available for all members of the Curious Crew who support me on Patreon. Join us there for this and more bonus content. patreon.com/themodernfairysightingspodcast. When you were down at the riverside, was it more of a stream or a river?
I always call it a stream, a babbling brook, you know.
Did you feel a sense to step into the river in any way?
No, I didn't want to get in. I mean, I would have only got wet up to my thighs though.
It's deeper than I was imagining the stream.
Right, yeah.
But okay, yeah, that's interesting, because as you say, you then heard the voices coming from the stream. And did your friend get to hear it too?
You know what, he's a bit more stoic than me, and well, I would, maybe stoic's not the right word, but silent. He talked very little about it afterwards for a long time, and I would talk and I'd describe it and he would just agree that's what happened. I never kind of could get it out of him from his point of view, which is quite telling. And he was having other mystical experiences, you know, on the lead up to this, so it was part of just other things that were happening in our lives, you know.
Yeah.
So I think he just treated it like, this is just what happens when you start dabbling with this stuff. So I didn't actually find out whether he heard them or not. I feel like he did, because it seemed blatantly obvious that to me.
The feather had landed on his knee as well later, which is something.
Yeah, I did feel like, and I was the scared one who got out of there. So I did feel like, you know, maybe it was more surrounding him, that experience. Yeah, although you know, you can read it any way. But
did you keep the feather?
No, I mean, I don't know where that is. No, I have no idea. Yeah, that's an interesting question. but since they have popped up at very synchronistic times, you know, and they've become a little motif. I sort of sometimes keep them, and I actually took to visiting that spot, you know, around Christmas time, to say sort of thank you, you know. I've done that for the past couple of years now. I mean, this happened when we were 17 or 18, so, and I'm 42 now, so it's been some time. I think in my life as well, I had a series of these things happen, and I would definitely say they were karmic. There's things that happened that broke down my conditioning and led to these experiences happening. And at the time, they were awful. I wouldn't have wished them on anything. And they were prolonged and stuff. But then afterwards, you sort of realize years later how important and formative these experiences were, you know. And that without them, you just wouldn't know certain things, you know. I wouldn't. So it's very difficult to you know, you can start saying, you know, there's things happen for a reason, you know, but there is a lot of bad things do happen, you know. I'm not saying it's all good for the ultimate good or something like that. It might be, I don't know, but there's definitely that's something I've experienced in my life, is that terror has a transformative effect, and it can kind of be actually something that's useful, you know, in the long run. The things that happen to me, I wouldn't want them to happen to other people, you know, but then I'm grateful for them now. So I was really obsessed with Ouija boards in primary school as well. It kind of goes back to this thing about yes, spirits moving things. I'm quite obsessed with, I was quite obsessed with that idea, you know, as a child, you know. I mean, I probably did develop something of a magical, you know, safeguard. It wasn't until a lot later that I learned about all this stuff, and that it was, I think it was, I needed to kind of walk into the lion's den, you know, in a way. It was like to learn and then kind of then think, oh yeah, God, magical hygiene is like a big part of this whole thing, you know. And like, we used to mess around with Ouija boards like nobody's business, you know. So and we have lots of results that were sometimes fun and sometimes like really scary, you know. There's one that we did that was the last one we ever did, you know. And recently my mind's been going back to them again, just as an object. I think they're beautiful, you know. And what we, when it used to really work, that feeling as well, again, we were getting back to that feeling of, because I think what would elicit the effect of a Ouija board was often people's nervous tension in the room, you know. That would usually be the psychic stuff that gets it going. And then after that, even someone cheating, actually, you know, someone actually pushing it, they might actually prime the pump for other people, you know. Right. And then suddenly the thing is actually working, and they're the trickster who might be pushing it is actually kind of like playing along, channeling with spirits.
They're channeling the trickster.
Yeah, I noticed that those things like that happening. And then me and the same guy, actually, we did a Ouija board, which had a, again, as we sat down and we were like, let's do a one just me and you to like see what effects we can get, you know, like see how powerful this thing is, how real it is. And it was, this is the last one we ever did, you see. I don't know how old we were at this point, but it was really strong, and it was giving us lots of information, lots of answers. And one thing we noticed as well in that time is that the planchette thing, we're just using a piece of paper, that it would use either his hand or my hand, but not together, and it would hurt after a while, this like electric feeling. And we would ask it, can you use his hand now? And it would, and then he'd start pulling it, and then so that was a kind of really strange parapsychological effect. But it managed to predict some very particular things, you know, which we could then verify straight afterwards. And then it told a kind of joke, which was like a sick joke, you know. And at that point we were like, oh my God, this is like evil, you know. We thought it was evil. And for sure, I feel like there was a whole host of things that happened around that time. And I don't think it was purely down to that Ouija board thing, but there was a whole host of things that happened to my friends, which were like high strangeness events, more like poltergeisty events. Mm-hmm. I've another friend in our friendship group at that time, he would get attacked, and people would see it. Like, you'd see him get attacked. It drew blood sometimes. And at one time, I wasn't there, but that he got hit in the face in the basement of someone's house, and both of them turned, and they both saw someone running out from running away.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's awful. I have
another story about him. There was a lot of activity that went on around this other friend of mine around that time, which is like more like haunting. But I'm not sure. I always think about this, and it's like, I'm not sure if it's like part of oneself becomes, you know, energetically detached, and is kind of it haunting yourself, you know, like
it could be
kind of how it seemed almost, you know. The way I view it now is a lot different. Like the Ouija board is, it gets its power from people being scared of it, and that is how it works. And so, and if you want
like
to have
else.
I think, and if you want to like kind of engage the phenomena, as it were, in any way, like a Ouija board might not be the best way for you. It might be whatever gets your heebie-jeebies going, you know. And that for me became, you know, going out into the woods at night, because a lot of people would think that's really frightening, just the thought of that. And I'd do it every night, you know. We would sit there doing, or I'd do it alone, I would do it with friends, and we were kind of trying to elicit that feeling of kind of fear, really. I mean, it's magical wonder, but it comes with a lot of, the fear is kind of really does get the thing moving.
Yeah, no, I agree.
There's vague feelings of like reasons for it all happening, and
you feel it's kind of like working towards something that is of meaning for you in this lifetime here.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to say I'm going, there's going to be an end. Well, I suppose there is with death and all that, but it's kind of like a, yeah, I don't know. It's just to be, just to learn and be good, you know, because I haven't been a good person for the, like, so it's all the humbling sort of things, you know, that, that if there's anything, then it's the hope that you're going to learn and grow and get wiser and more patient, more loving, you know, and all that kind of thing, more understanding, more resilient and things like that, just basic things that normal people want and talk about, you know.
Well, it's true. I mean, sort of working with children, they teach you a lot of that, in fact, don't they? That resilience, that innate wisdom.
Just try not to knock it out of them, you know, to, like you talk about fostering the, letting the plant grow, giving it and what it needs, but not interfering and all that kind of thing. Yeah. I don't have children, so I'm not, but I do work with a lot of children. I see, you know, I try and keep myself a child or something like that. You know?
Yeah, no, it's good to know that I do have some friends that are teachers or, you know, work with children in some way. And I'm so glad that they are out there doing what they're doing and keeping the magic alive in children's lives.
Did get really into light language. I got into it through improvised music, really. So I came at it quite intellectually later on, but I'd had experiences of this. It's just glossolalic speaking in tongues that can come through. And people get really good at it, and they become channels for this language, which they say is coming from all different places. You know, people have different rationales for how it works. And there's quite interesting studies on it. You know, people have done studies on glossolalia. But I got into it because I was interested in improvised music, because I was kind of like, we were improvising a lot, doing our music.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, well, this is coming from somewhere. And it's not, it's not language in the normal sense, but it's, and then I realized that it was very much like what the light language channels are doing. And I have, and then I developed a project, a musical project around using light language channeling. So I would go on the internet and find people who do collect hundreds of hours of people who would upload videos of themselves, light language channeling. And then I'd mix it all together into like a long patchwork piece, which was like a ceremony or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So these were individuals working at home alone, just doing it on in the laptops, channeling some good energies or whatever they were doing, and then I would piece it together. So I've sort of become a bit of a light language fan and enthusiast of the whole scene. There's a big online scene of people who do it.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. You sent me your music that you had made with a water harp. I absolutely loved it when I first heard that, and as I say, I ended up using some in the Jack Frost episode with your kind permission. So how did that come about? Because of course this links in with you being drawn to the water.
Well, that's, I can't remember how it happened really, but I've been playing with wind harps, aeolian harps, for quite some time, you know, quite common things, aren't they? And then I'd been building instruments for a long time too. And then it struck me one day, and because I was out, I was actually in Cornwall with my aeolian harp, and I was wondering, does it work in the water? And I first thing, I took it in the sea, actually, and I noticed that when I dragged it along, and you have to use a special microphone, you can't just hear it. When I dragged it along in the water, it started to make sing quite nicely, and then I realized, you know, oh God. A river's just perfect, isn't it? You know, it's moving water. So I think the next day I took it to a river in Ethy Woods in Cornwall, and I stuck it in the river and it sang. And this is where we get back to the fairies, I think, is it sounded like a human voice. Well, it sounded like a voice, not a human voice, like an angelic voices sometimes, you know, depending on how you tuned it, the flow of the river, the depth you put it, there's lots of factors. And it's kind of, it's a, like a living thing, because the river has got a lot of chaos, so it doesn't do the same thing. It's like kind of like the wind, but a bit more reliable, in that the wind is far more precocious, isn't it? You know, when it comes and goes, the river, it still has a lot of chaos. So the river harp would sing, but it would definitely have this feeling of being alive, like you couldn't predict it, sort of thing. And it was very, those, and it has been forever since, actually, sitting with the river harp with my headphones, recording it, is like a super magical experience for me, just listening to the river sing. And I feel like in my imagination, perhaps, that it really enjoys being given a voice, you know. It's like it enjoys this sort of interaction. And so me and my friend, we love making instruments and interacting with nature in all different ways. So we made an album. It's not just the river harp. It has all kinds of stuff, rain, dripping rocks, wind, and other things. And we built instruments that we could then put in the environment, record, and we saw it as like dowsing or something like that, or channeling.
Yeah.
As well. You know, we were making radio antennas for spirits to speak. Yeah. You know, that was the way we framed it, sort of thing. And then with very little editing, we would, you know, overlay them. So we'd have like the river harp with the drip drums. Like you find a dripping rock in the woods and you'd make little drums for it, and you make little beats, you know, so things like that. And we'd overlay them. And that's what the album became. It's called Environmental Meditation Music.
Yeah.
And I mean, we spent maybe 5-6 years making that one. We've got so much more material, and we plan on making a series and making a video out of it, because we didn't actually record any video of these things. They actually, some of them are quite good. They look sculpturally very interesting in the environment too. You could make installations that way. Part of it, just to get into the more parascience feeling, is it seems to respond biofeedback is what it's like. It's responding. There's a definite feeling of that. Like if you sit with it, listening to it, you'll notice that undulations in your emotions and undulations in the weather and the environment and the voice of the instrument are very concordant, and it's like there's some sort of beautiful in the moment feeling that is both in you and in the environment around you. And it's like it's both moving together in the now, you know, you're surfing the now together.
Yeah, and emerging.
I suppose, yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, weather magic is like it's one of the primary forms of magic, isn't it? You know, it's like, because, and it gets back to that thing about chaos, I think, you've got a lot of a chaotic system, so it's easy, it's more malleable. It wants to play along. It's more, it's like that. Again, it wants to play along. It's easier to affect in a way, or like to get involved with psychically. If it's more chaotic, the more chaotic the system, the more kind of it can be a house for spirits or something like that, maybe. Sound being so malleable and so etheric, that I was drawn to it as my medium straight away. Yeah, so I was always making music. And especially by that time, I mean, I was 18 at that time. I've been involved in a lot of different things, and quite overtly magical music as well, making mystical sounding things, you know. Now some of it's a bit sort of twee or childlike or something like that, I might look at it. But I've actually gone into doing a lot of stuff, music with children and things like that, you know,
right,
as I've got older. You know, it all led in a certain direction, like a career path or something, you know.
What I'm hearing here is you have had so many experiences communing with, you know, going out of body and these otherworldly beings in other worlds, you know, going to other places than this kind of waking material plane. But when you're talking about making this music, it sounds to me as if it's really grounding for you too. There's something about that. So you are still communing and you are still open, but it's a really kind of grounded way. In fact,
I would definitely, I'm not pushing back, but I would say, you know, that it took me quite a long time to integrate this, but there isn't a difference between this world and the other worlds. You know, it's just, it is all one thing, and that life is kind of a dream. The best metaphor for life is dream, I think. Mm. That's what I've, so, but getting back to being grounded, because you have to feel like you're somewhere. Yeah. You know, you have to feel like, even if that is temporary and maybe ultimately an illusion, you know, those experiences, like, you know, I got really into cold water swimming over the past like 5 or 6 years. And a lot of that was for the same reason that I wanted to hurt myself in those early days, because it puts me in my body, you know. Yeah. So, and it does it in a really healthy way. So, and I was into skateboarding for years for the same reason too, because it's like a way of being dangerous that was kind of socially endorsed, you know, that I enjoyed a lot as well, you know. But it was a way of putting myself in the physical, really in the physical. Physical is kind of an illusion too. And that's quite frightening, I think. That goes back to talking about derealization and feeling mentally ill. You know, it's like what you really want is to feel grounded. And so, and if everything feels like it's a dream, that can be really quite scary,
that's,
you know.
Hard. Especially when you're going through, you know, growing up and going through those, you know, tender years, it's very difficult, because you do need to sort of feel like you've got a base from which to explore, you know, a safe somewhere to come back to, so that you can kind of go out there and test something else and then come back and test here and come back. So that's really tough, actually, to sort of have all of that going on at that time.
But the going back to the instruments and things, it definitely grounds me, but more of what the feeling that I'd say is, it connects me, you know, to the earth and the physical forces, you know. You feel like and it animates them for me, you know, because I suppose I'm a total animist in my worldview, that it's all alive, you know. And this is just a way of making that more explicit or something like that, you know. I'm playing with it a little, using a few tricks.
Well, yeah, well, thank you very much for sharing all of this with me. Are you still friends with the guy that you went down to the river with?
Strange. He lives abroad, and I will see him again. I was going to say, just for the record, we agreed on that. Yeah. And other mystical experiences that we'd had together, you know, we were together on that. There was one time we saw each other as if through a fog in a dream, like we were both sleeping, and I woke up, I said, oh my god, I've just seen him. And then he came running around to my house, and he just be like, I saw you, you know. And we just seen each other in a dream. It was a very strange experience, a very quick one. I think that was a few years before the orb experience, that one. And I'd seen this guy do some strange things too, you know, like open his mouth and emit strange sounds whilst in trance and all kinds of things like that, you know. I saw some things that were inexplicable.
Sounds like two young men, sort of very open, and it's great that you had each other to do all this exploration.
Because it wasn't just two of us, it was a group, and we were very lucky to have each other. But then it comes back to that soul family thing as well. You feel like that's just too good to be true, you know, that you would have but who knows, you know, it's all
who knows how it all gets put together. Yeah.